Play fake. Bethard sets up deep in the pocket. Goes down the field for Smith. Oh,
he caught it! Smith! Touchdown, 85 yards, Iowa! C.J. Bethard!
Good morning. I am Hank Jones. This is Hank Jones Poly Sports. This is a very abbreviated version of the show. If you'll see in the show notes, I have to run across Florida today to help out. My wife's uncle's got some stuff going on, so I said I was available to help. I am not paddling today, so there you go. You're on Global Patriot Radio, where you can be finding us several times a week on Blog Talk Radio, starting Mondays, the Vito Esposito Show, featuring Vito and Big Al, Mamma Mia, No Sharia. They go at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Monday. Wednesday, of course, it's me, Hank Jones, with Hank Jones Poly Sports, 6 p.m. Eastern Time normally, except days like today where something comes up. Then Saturday nights, Ministry of Samadakduk and the Beautiful Christie, revealing the truth about Islam. That's 10 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time. Don't have to watch any Pac-12 late night games. That's kind of nice. I'm hanging out in the Space Force Observation Outpost with my mini Aussie. Wife is getting ready to head to work over in Acoustic Hank Land. And due to the shortness of today's show, I'm dispensing with laughies. I really don't have any politics stories because those are ones I want to really devote some time to and really look at. So we're basically dealing with sports. I do have this week's obituaries. A week ago Tuesday, we lost former astronaut and former Eastern Airlines CEO Frank Borman after a stroke at age 95. His death fell just a week after that of his fellow former astronaut Ken Mattingly. Now, Frank Borman was an aeronautical engineer. He was an Air Force pilot, rose to the rank of colonel, was also a test pilot, and eventually became a NASA astronaut. He was commander of Apollo 8, the first manned mission to reach the moon. They did not land, but they did orbit the moon. They orbited and became the first humans to actually see the dark side of the moon. Part of what was called NASA's next class in 1962, Frank Borman was also the commander on Gemini 7, which at the time set a spaceflight endurance record of 14 days. He was part of the review board for the Apollo 1 tragedy and was the White House liaison for Apollo 11, where he watched the moon landing at the White House with President Richard Nixon. Now, after he retired from NASA, he went to Eastern Airlines, where he eventually became CEO, left in 1986. He then ran a Ford dealership in Texas with his son, and eventually he retired to Montana, where his family bought a cattle ranch. Now, I personally remember him on TV during the Apollo 13 crisis. And my father, I remember noting several times to my mother, he said, boy, how calm and cool he was. I remember him saying, boy, that Borman is just cool, so cool. And he was. And that's sort of the reputation that astronauts have, is that they just, and test pilots and pilots, you know, it's just, the phrase from The Right Stuff is they maintain an even strain. And that's what Frank Borman did in that case. And frankly, that probably helped a lot to calm down Americans across the United States who were probably panicking and didn't like the idea of dealing with another tragedy. And he kept us calm. Last Friday, we lost Australian singer and actor Johnny Rufo to brain cancer, just 35. His most notable acting work was on the series Home and Away. We also lost former cinematographer John Bailey at age 81. His works include Ordinary People, The Big Chill, and Groundhog Day. He also served as president of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences from 2017 to 2019. Saturday on Veterans Day, we lost former NFLer DJ Hayden, age 33, in a traffic accident. Now, he had stints with the Oakland Raiders, Detroit Lions, and Jacksonville Jaguars. And Monday, we lost Judge Marianne Trump Barry to cancer at age 86. She was the older sister of President Trump, served in the U.S. District Court of New Jersey and later the Court of Appeals for the 3rd District. If you would, please add or continue prayers for Felicia Goodson and her family. She had let me know via X, formerly known as Twitter, that she was diagnosed with cancer just over a year ago. A great lady, as I've talked about, one of my favorite guests I've ever had on this show. Just so fun to talk with her. You know, email back and forth a couple times and talk on Twitter. Just a sweet lady. You know, a former teammate of her son, Tyler, said, he just comes from a good family. You know, it's simple as that sometimes. It's not a big deal. It's not, you know, they're just a good family. Good people raising good sons. Moving on, an arrest has been made in the death of former Pittsburgh Penguin Adam Johnson. I remember I talked about him before. He was the guy Pittsburgh Penguin, now playing in England, and a man has been arrested on suspicion of manslaughter. I'm not sure why they're suspicious about it. It's pretty cut and dried if you watch the video. Comes more than 2 weeks since police began investigating the incident. Happened on October 28th. His throat was cut by a skate blade. It says during a collision. It was not. The player literally did a reverse roundhouse kick. And worse, you see some of the film where he's getting up and holding his throat, trying to skate off, and teammates helping him. It's absolutely awful. Now, they did not release the identity, although I'm sure it was Matt Petgrave, who plays for Sheffield, was the one whose skate cut him. Now, unless something else is going on, like maybe he was told to, or his coach or something, who knows? Said he skated toward Johnson and collided with another pant. No, that's not what happened. He turned and kicked before he ever made any contact. Says his left skate kicked up as he began to fall. I'm sorry. Watch the video. Now, several leagues are requiring mandatory neck guards. Some are making it mandatory. Some are making it, personal choice. Now, Pittsburgh Penguins, has mandated that its American Hockey League and East Coast Hockey League affiliates wear neck protectors. The Western Hockey League announced that it would be making neck protection devices mandatory. NHL, of course, it would have to be signed off on by the union, so it would probably be one of those grandfather things, sort of like with helmets way back in the day, when those who did not want to wear a helmet were not forced to, if they had entered the league at a certain time or before a certain time. Yeah, this, okay, I'll buy manslaughter, but I really think it's closer to murder. I really do. A judge has ruled in favor of Washington State and Oregon State that they now control the fate of the Pac-12, considering they're the only two schools that'll be left after this season. So ruling grants Oregon State and Washington State full control of the Pac-12. And there's a good reason for it. Like I said, the others are leaving. A state judge in Washington granting Oregon State and Washington State sole control of the Pac-12 Board of Directors. Issued the ruling at a preliminary injunction hearing in Whitman County Court. Granted a stay of the decision until Monday, of no objection from Oregon State or Washington State. As the 10 schools leaving the Pac-12, initiate the appeals process. The decision comes roughly 2 months after a temporary restraining order that prevented Pac-12 Commissioner George Kliavkov from calling any Pac-12 board meetings. Now, the judge, Gary Leiby, or Leibe, I grew up where conduct spoke louder than words. That's how my parents treated me, and that's how I treated my children when they were growing up. With that in mind, this court finds in favor of that the plaintiffs are likely to prevail on their interpretation of the bylaws. Three parties were heard, Washington State and Oregon State, the Pac-12, and the University of Washington, which entered the case as an intervener working on behalf of the 9 other departing schools. Over the course of about 2.5 hours, all three parties argued for different outcomes. Oregon and Washington State, Oregon State and Washington State, and they've done for weeks and written briefs. that conference bylaws were clear that when schools announced they were joining other conferences, they immediately surrendered their seat on the conference board. That, they argued, was how it worked when UCLA and USC announced they were joining the Big Ten, and again when Colorado announced it was leaving for the Big 12. It was not only until the other seven announced they were also leaving, the two schools argued, that those schools' interpretation of the bylaws changed and claimed that all 12 deserved a seat on the board. There isn't a single document that's been produced which shows that the University of Washington thought that this was the correct position until it provided its notice of withdrawal, and now the shoe was on the other foot, argued lawyer Eric McMichael for the two remaining schools. But parties are not allowed to just blatantly flip-flop on the meaning of contractual provisions just so they could have their cake and eat it too. Conference attempted to maintain an appearance of neutrality, lobbying for the terms of the temporary restraining order, which required a unanimous vote on any major decision to remain in place. The conference's attorney, Mark Lambert, was less assertive when addressing the court. Asked by Leiby if the Pac-12 wants to continue in its business in the future, Lambert said, "Frankly, that is up to Oregon State and Washington State at this point, and the conference and the commissioner are sensitive to those issues and also sensitive to the notion that without a board, that makes things difficult." Departing schools asked Leiby to rule against the others, OSU and WSU, outright, which would have essentially given them the right to govern the conference with a 10-2 supermajority. At the heart of the dispute is forthcoming revenue. The departing schools, as they did in writing earlier this month, expressed concern that Oregon State and Washington State could withhold revenue set to be distributed during this academic year. They also made the case that Oregon State and Washington State fear that the departing schools could vote to dissolve the conference, then evenly distribute the remaining assets was irrelevant because of their belief that process could be conducted without any board action. It's simply the fact that the members could decide to dissolve that they wanted, argued Dan Levin for Washington. Of course, in all this time during these proceedings and before, no member has called for such a vote. It's unclear if the departing schools would attempt to act on that mechanism if they don't win on appeals. The remaining members said in a statement, "We are disappointed with the decision and are immediately seeking review in the Washington Supreme Court and requesting to put on hold implementation of this decision." Members of the Pac-12 participating in ongoing and scheduled competition. "We are members of the board under the Pac-12 bylaws. We have the right to the revenue earned by our schools during the 23-24 academic year, which is necessary in order to operate our athletics programs and to provide mental and physical health services, academic support, and other support programs for our student athletes." Frankly, on that point, they're not wrong. They cannot be expected to, in my opinion, to forfeit all revenue for this year, I don't think. Meanwhile, one of the former Pac-12 members, Deion Sanders, says he's not hearing it when it comes to other coaching jobs, and we will get to that in a second. Pretty much the news from the political polysports realm, I guess you'd say. Now, let's get to football. There were several upsets last weekend, but none really in the top 10. What you had in the college football playoff rankings, if you will, you had Louisville winning over Wofford, Virginia, but only by 7. Georgia just trounced Ole Miss, number 2 Georgia over number 9 Ole Miss, 52-17. Number 3 Michigan over number 10 Penn State, 24-15. Miami, Florida went down to number 4 Florida State. Number 18, Utah, lost to number 5 Washington. Actually had a 4-point lead at halftime. Washington scored 11 unanswered points in the second half. USC in free fall at 7-4 went down to Oregon, 36-27. Texas barely got by unranked TCU, 29-26. Alabama had no problem with unranked Kentucky, 49-21. Oregon State, 8-2 now, number 12 last week, manhandling Stanford. And number 14, Missouri, bitch slapped number 13, Tennessee, 36-7. The big news, if you want to talk about the top 25 in the CFP, probably be the number 15 Oklahoma State Cowboys, who beat Oklahoma last week in the last scheduled bedlam, went down to Orlando, or in my case, came down to Orlando, to take on the 4-5 UCF Knights, and promptly got obliterated, 45-3. Quarterback John Rhys Plumlee, who's been recovering from injury, had a great day, 299 yards, 3 TDs passing. R.J. Harvey, running back, 24 carries, 206 yards, 3 TDs. They just manhandled them. That was a bitch slapping. Texas Tech, 5-5 now after winning over number 16 Kansas, 16-13. So yeah, number 21 Arizona got by Colorado, 34-31. Now Colorado is now 4-6. Colorado's got to win their last two games. So this Saturday, they're at Washington State, who is foundering a bit. Washington State is also 4-6, 1-6 in conference, as is Colorado. And then they travel and that's at Washington State. Following week, they travel to Utah, number 22 Utah, to take on the Utes. So yeah, it's getting interesting. The third, so several firings over the weekend. Penn State fired offensive coordinator Mike Yurkich. I don't get that. It scored two touchdowns against Michigan. No team has done that this season. They basically have two losses, and frankly, James Franklin can unless he's going to try and place the blame elsewhere. They went for two early on. They were chasing points. I'd say that's on the head coach because he could always override the offensive coordinator. I mean, if he sees the two-point conversion attempt going on out there, he can always call timeout and say, uh-uh. So I think that was James Franklin covering his ass. San Diego State head coach Brady Hoke announced he is retiring after this season. Boise State fired head coach Andy Avalos. They are currently 5-5 and still fighting for the Mountain West title, but they fired him. Mississippi State fired head coach Zach Arnett, took over after the death of Mike Leach. Texas A&M fired head coach Jimbo Fisher, but he gets a $76 million payout. Coach Prime, by the way, says he's not a candidate for any of those vacancies. Oregon's Dan Lanning also says there's no way he's leaving. No idea, Washington coach Kalen DeBoer. But the third college football playoff rankings are out. Georgia leapfrogs Ohio State, now number one. Ohio State number two. Michigan 3. Florida State 4. Washington 5. Oregon 6. Texas 7. Alabama 8. Missouri making their first run into the top 10 at number 9 with a big win over Tennessee. And Louisville cracks the top 10 for the first time. Iowa, by the way, is now at number 16. Jumped several schools who were either idle or lost or simply aren't as impressive as they were the previous week. This week we got games with two ranked teams. The following: Utah, 22 Utah at number 17 Arizona. New number 1 Georgia at number 18 Tennessee. 21 Kansas State at number 25 Kansas. And number 5 Washington heads to Corvallis to take on number 11, Oregon State. I think that's Corvallis. Might be Beaverton. Who knows? Interesting commentary from Outkick.com's Jason Whitlock, who had this to say about Coach Prime, Deion Sanders. Now, as he said, this is what he said: Colorado's fall from media darling to the bottom of the Pac-12 standings is of no real surprise. At no point during Deion's 11-month tenure as Colorado's head coach has he conducted himself in a manner that will produce consistent winning at the major college level. From day one, when he filmed himself telling the existing Colorado players to hit the transfer portal and boasted, "I'm coming," he has led a circus. Some commentary or some answer. One person says it was season one and he didn't even have his own players. I beg to differ. He completely overhauled his roster. I remember when Jason used to stand for something, now he just wants headlines. Disagree. Now another one said, well, I was intrigued with Deion's passion, but as the season wore on, my intrigue has faded. Still thinks he has good entertainment, though. That's about it. Hopefully he gets a good recruitment year under his belt and spring brings hope. Another person said, Coach Prime Adana has been interesting to watch. Win, lose, or draw. I played college football, so I've seen what coaches are like from little league to college. And I must say, he doesn't look like any of the coaches I've ever known as an athlete or even now. This said, I'm trying to cut him some slack and hoping his intentions are pure and for the betterment of his players. This said, I think Jason is onto something with him possibly being a prima donna, looking out mostly for his sons and creating toxic and circus environments. Time will tell. Yeah, I don't think it's strictly that. I don't think that the circus this year it has been. And frankly, Deion's had to drum up the interest in the program. I mean, you can't, you know. Let's put it this way. The money's not going to come, donors and the public and, you know, people going to games, et cetera. It's not going to come with just same old, same old. Got to believe that. It's just not going to come with same old, same old. So, be that as it may, Deion's got to do. The Big Ten, Michigan situation is heating up. Head coach Jim Harbaugh last Friday was suspended from the sideline for the rest of the regular season, just during games. He can't be at games, evidently. He can practice. He could be, probably could be in the locker room before the game, but he cannot be on the sidelines. Now, they have a hearing before a judge this week, at which Jim Harbaugh plans to speak on his own behalf. As I mentioned earlier, Penn State fired their offensive coordinator following that loss to Michigan. Like I said, this is James Franklin covering his own ass. Three of the Big Ten West teams that were still in the hunt for division lead all lost. Nebraska went down to Maryland. That was a comedy of errors on both sides. Nebraska was literally driving for the winning score and threw an interception. Maryland took it down and got a walk-off field goal. Wisconsin went down hard to Northwestern in Madison, 24-3. It was 24-3 and a half. That's how it ended. Minnesota got bitch slapped by Purdue. So this leaves the Hawkeyes in sole possession of first place. Literally, in the Big Ten West, by two games. Now, some say, I've said before, don't worry, the Hawks have two games left to blow the lead, possibly in spectacular fashion. In all seriousness, I got to believe the Hawkeyes are headed to Indianapolis. Now, they've got to win either at home against Illinois or at Nebraska. That said, here are this week's games. Number 3, Michigan at Maryland. Both are bowl eligible at this point. Rutgers at number 12, Penn State. Again, both are bowl eligible. Michigan State and Indiana, neither is close to bowl eligibility. Purdue at Northwestern. Northwestern is now 5-5, so they are fighting for bowl eligibility. They've got Purdue this week and Illinois the following week. Purdue is not in the bowl eligible picture. Minnesota at number 2, Ohio State. Minnesota is 5-5, so presumably they will be 5-6 and have to win against Wisconsin in the last week of the season to become bowl eligible. Nebraska at Wisconsin, again, both 5-5, trying desperately for bowl eligibility. And then Illinois comes to number 16, Iowa, in Iowa City. Now, interesting piece from ESPN that mentions Brian Ferentz, departing offensive coordinator Brian Ferentz. It's called the CFP Anger Index. Who should be most upset with their ranking this week? Number 1 is Washington, still at number 5. Number 2, Ole Miss and Oklahoma, both at 8-2, who are ranked 13th and 14th respectively. Now, Ole Miss, as I said, got bitch slapped. Number three, who should be? Number three says Iowa offensive coordinator Brian Ferentz. We all had a good laugh about the drive for 325. Iowa's quest to average 25 points per game and thus save Brian Ferentz's job. Iowa sitting at 8-2, number 16. Barring a surprising 106-10 win over Nebraska in a few weeks, it ain't going to happen. And Ferentz has already been told he won't return next year. But what's the problem here? Sure, Iowa hasn't topped 26 points against a Power 5 opponent this year, or perhaps this century. The Hawkeyes are still 8-2, soaring up the rankings like a Tory Taylor punt. Indeed, they just racked up 402 yards of offense against Rutgers last week. That's 74 more yards than Ohio State had against Rutgers a week earlier. Put Marvin Harrison Jr. on Iowa's offense, and it's averaging, well, at least 24.5 points a game, and we round up. Casting aspersions against poor Ferentz is all part of our society's own preconceived notions of beauty and success. So what if Iowa wins differently? So what if the Hawkeyes' offense makes paint dry feel like a rollicking thrill ride? What's it about? The wins. Brian Ferentz is a winner. It's not too late to change your mind. Iowa, bring this man back. Well, okay, that's a little much. But it makes a good point, that's for sure. So the Hawks looked really good in their 22-0 win over Rutgers last Saturday. 402 yards of offense. OSU, as I mentioned, put up only 328. Deacon Hell had by far his best game as a Hawkeye, 20 of 31, 220 yards, 21 yards, a TD, kind of a stupid interception. But we got to remember, he hasn't played since his junior year of high school. He never saw the field at Wisconsin. The senior year was canceled due to COVID. So, you know, looked good. Running up against the time, so just some observations. The running game looked good. The passing game opened up, as you saw. Caleb Brown looked really good. Deontay Vines is out for this next weekend at least. Tory Taylor, we know, is not coming back next year. Noah Shannon will walk with the seniors at Senior Day this Saturday. And a couple guys are up in the air. One, Eric All, two, Luke Lachey, and three, of all people, Jay Higgins. We know Jay Higgins has not made the decision. Personally, I would love him to stay, obviously, but Jay Higgins has got to go get his money. Simple as that. He's ready for the pros right now. He will be a great NFL linebacker. So that's it for this week, folks. I've got to head out, but thanks for those listening via recording, because that's the only way you're going to see it. I didn't put it out for people to come in and listen live. Have a great weekend. Be safe. God bless America, and of course, go Hawkeyes this Saturday.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.